Welcome back, ladies and gents, to the Peaky Pod by Story Archives on the Midnight Exchange Podcast Network, eventually to be called the Soapbox Podcast Network. Right, Zach?
Yeah, we'll get there, but yeah, correct.
I'm your other host, Mario, and we're here back again. Really hyped, just especially hyped. It's Monday now, and it's been one day since the premiere of Peaky Blinders, the final season, aka season 6. Zach, what are you thinking, man? How do you feel? Your expectations? Did the episode meet your expectations of the level of hype that we have been building since, I'd say, the middle of last year?
I would have to say yes. I'm super excited that we finally have gotten to the final season of Peaky Blinders here. I've been waiting for this for quite a while. I think many people have. I would say this lived up to my expectations. There are some things in the episode that I'm maybe a little disappointed on or saddened by, I guess. But overall, I do think this episode was incredible. I think the season's going to be great. And like I mentioned, after I first saw the episode, I think the set design and the cinematography in this tops that of the last season, which was already incredible. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally excited to see what else the rest of the season has in store for us. How about you?
You know what the vibes that this show was giving me, and just in the first episode? You watched Breaking Bad, right?
Of course.
Okay, so you remember the last season of Breaking Bad? No spoilers on the Breaking Bad. Oh, God, this is some spoilers. All right. If you haven't seen Breaking Bad, because this is not the Breaking Bad show, you are going to get a spoiler warning right now. I'm not going to actually drop a spoiler, but I may give some things away by saying something, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you're going to give you 5 seconds. Can you count down like 5 seconds?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay. If you're still here, just come back like in 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. At the end of Breaking Bad, there's like a few episodes where it's like Bryan Cranston's character is just trying to put a final knot. Walter White's just putting a final knot on everything. Mm-hmm. He's clearly a changed man. He's learned lessons. Mm-hmm. And from certain things that have happened to him. And it's just a different feel. It's not like that. You just know, you feel things are coming to an end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of the impression I get with Tommy. That, like, for once, this is not like your relapsed cousin. Not literally that you have a cousin, but like, you know, like somebody that you know that is like, oh, I'm going to change. And like, they never change.
They fall back into it.
Yeah. You actually get the impression by several different little moments in this episode that Tommy has definitely turned a leaf, at least 75%.
Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, as long as you don't piss them off, I think it's 25%. Yeah, golly. Basically. It does kind of have that feeling, right? Like, you know, I mean, it's also kind of like when you know you're going to die soon, right? Like, you know, you always want to put the last few things in place. Make sure that when whatever happens, or is going to happens, you know, it's as smooth as possible, right?
Yeah, he's like,
it kind of has that feeling.
He's tying up all loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's making peace. He's not really making peace, to be honest, in this episode.
No, he's definitely
He's
not.
Actually starting a couple more wars. Right?
Well, is he starting or is he finishing?
He's instigating. Like, he's both starting and finishing, but only Tommy knows what his true strategies are, right?
Yeah, we don't know what his real ambitions are.
Now, I found it interesting that the title of this episode is Black Day.
Yeah.
Which the title of last season's episode was
like Black Monday.
Black Monday or Black Tuesday, right?
I think it was Black Monday, but whatever it was, yeah, it was very similar.
It's about the stock market crash, and this day of this season is the last day of Prohibition, which is interesting for a lot of reasons. And this is actually this is not my 17th or 47th time watching this episode, unlike all the other seasons. This is my second time watching this episode. So for the first time ever, at least since I first watched Peaky Blinders all those years ago, I don't know what the hell's going to happen next week. And so I'm literally, like everybody else in the world, just along for the ride. Now, I got to say, my season 6 predictions were spot on. Like, I'm looking good for those bottles of whiskey, my friend. I am looking good. I like it. See. I'm a little bit drunk off of it right now. But then Tommy really took the air out of me, because I guess we're just drinking water the rest of the season.
Yeah, I was so shocked by that. I'm like, dang, I'm going to have to start the first episode off just drinking water.
Is it me or his voice is different now? Like, he's no longer gruff Tommy, who's kind of always half drunk on whiskey. Now it's Correct. Like a different feel to it. Lizzie he's makes like, mention of it.
He's like the chess player right now. Like, he's just moving the pieces around, but he's fully aware of everything that's going on. Like, he's become, I mean, even in his fighting style that you see in here, it's much quicker. It's not quite as, I don't want to say dirty.
Well, I have a point. I have a point and a prediction in that, regard.
All right.
Okay. Call me a prophet if this comes true. All right. Mm-hmm. This whole season's going to be a tryout for James Bond, for Cillian Murphy. Okay. If he didn't cement that shit in this episode, okay, speaking French out of nowhere. Okay. We haven't seen him speak French at all in all the seasons. He has a fighting style now where you can actually picture him taking on a bar of five or six people, which I never saw that because Tommy's gotten the shit kicked out of him a few times in this series.
Quite a few.
But we can see that this, now I can see the unique angle that Cillian Murphy could bring to James Bond as being the, first and foremost, probably the best actor to ever be casted as Bond, right? Secondly, as like some sort of like more elevated, sophisticated, educated Bond that knows different languages. Maybe he's like a polyglot or something like that. Knows like a bunch of different languages. Like, that would be dope if they took James Bond in that direction where he's like speaking French and he's, you know, it just takes it from a different approach. He's definitely has more, you know, of an acting range, in my opinion, when it comes to depth and stuff like that. Because Craig brought out the gritty, complex kind of, antagonist, protagonist. He was never an antagonist, but like that kind of morally complex character.
Yeah.
Right. Well, this is not a James Bond podcast, but I just, the moment he spoke to the commissioner, I said, oh, Stephen Knight is literally, he literally must have pulled him aside and said, hey, you're going to be James Bond.
Completely random side note, and then we'll jump back into this. I just realized I was watching the show C on Apple.
You're the second person this week who's told me about C. Did you like it?
I've been watching it. I'm on like episode 5. It's all right. There's some things in there that are really freaking weird. Just like really weird. I'm not even going to get into the details out here about how weird it is. But I just realized last night that it's directed by Stephen Knight as well.
Really? Hold on. Same Stephen Knight?
I think so. Unless I'm just smoking something and read something.
You might be smoking something there.
I don't know. Let's see. Who directed C? No. Hold on. I swear I saw his name in it.
Maybe it's a different Stephen Knight?
I don't know. I see Stephen Knight's name in here in IMDb. Stephen Knight is the executive producer. Sorry. He's the executive producer of 11 episodes from 2019 to 2021.
So he just funded it.
Saw his name popping up. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't see the title next to it.
Pretty cool, though, thinking that now he has the success from... That's the success from Peaky Blinders that allows him to executive produce that, I would have to say. Just going out on a limb here. But let's get into this episode. Let's get into this episode.
Let's do it.
Let's try to start at the same time now. Three.
All right.
Two, one. Okay.
Awesome.
Now, let's get this going. Scene one, we get the answer that we are picking up exactly from where we left off. It's the night after the failed attempt to assassinate Oswald Mosley. And I gotta say, there's something weird about when an invincible character lets you down. And the moment I heard the trigger click,
oh my God, I know.
I was like, oh my God. Tommy actually succumbed to the pressure of trying to kill himself.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, it felt like, in a way, like I was betrayed. Like that he copped out while he had so much responsibility on the table and leaving his, you know. And I'm not trying to be harsh on him, but it's just, we never see Tommy this vulnerable at his tipping point. Probably the closest thing to this at all is when he comes out of the hole in season 2. When the red right hand's about to kill him and Winston Churchill pretty much saves his life. You remember that?
Yeah.
And he comes out and he's his boogers all over his nose and he's going through the field and, and he's like a man resurrected. And here he's like a man defeated. It's like, it's
Completely.
He's a little boy crying out to his mom, which we hear him talk to his mom for the first time in the show ever. He says, mother. He says a few words in this episode that I literally was like shocked when he says, mother, they won't let, they wouldn't let me go through. They wouldn't let me pass. Yeah. Like there's the guardians of death that won't let him pass. Mm-hmm. You know,
they won't let him die yet. He's got unfinished business.
Right.
Like, this is all about him finishing his business. Yeah.
I won't get into like, I'm so confused as to why Lizzie was walking from the opposite direction of the field with the bullets in her hand. It just, that doesn't add up to me.
Was she, or did we just get turned around in the mess?
No, I'm looking at the way he's facing. Unless he was walking in the mud and we are being turned around, which is not unbelievable, but why are you going to wait? I guess she makes a great point. You know, she drops the bullets and says, hey, you want a way out? Here are your bullets. But at this point, it's like, you know, you pull the trigger, you should have been dead. He's imagining that he should have been dead. He intended to kill himself.
He lays there completely motionless, too.
And now just the energy sapped out of him, you know. The acting's next level. We're back to the traditional Peaky cut, right? Not that one that they were trying to mix it up, because they've mixed it up like every season a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we're back to the traditional Peaky cut here.
Yeah.
It is as shaved to the sides as it was in season one.
Very much so.
And you know, I'm glad.
I don't know if you thought anything of it, but when he gets out of the mud and he kind of looks the camera head on, right?
Yeah.
And his face just completely half black with mud and half white.
He's half dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's half in the grave.
That or it's you know, we don't really know which way he's gonna go still, right? Like is he still just gonna take over the party?
Totally intentional. Ooh, totally intentional.
Yeah.
I would have to say though, at this point, his ambition and desire to take over that party has to be done.
Right? You think?
Yeah, he literally just tried to blow his brains out. You know?
Yeah, I could see that.
The man had defeated him, because you think about his dialogue with Arthur right before, I think I may have found the man who I can't defeat. And he literally goes to kill himself.
Yeah.
Now, I did find it weird that a truck passes by him with a white flag and he pays no attention to it. But he is in a daze here. Like, what the hell just happened? I think he feels disgusted with himself here, you know? He's definitely been sobered up. Sorry to continue to speak.
No, it's fine. I mean, he is walking back, I mean, with the gun in his hand, right? So he's still totally in a daze. Like, even going into his office, the walk is the same. I think he still has the gun in his hand, right? I mean, unless you put that thing away, like, you're just kind of like, you don't really know what's going on. You're just there. Like, see, he still has the gun in his hand. He drops it on the table.
Yeah. Well, scene two, we finally get our answer to who interrupted the plans or thwarted the plans to assassinate Oswald Mosley.
Yeah.
And it's a call from, what's her name? Swain?
I don't know her name, but something it's the Swain. Chick from the Angels of Retribution or the IRA, right?
Yeah. She's from the IRA, and she's calling him from Tommy's office. I don't know if you noticed that little detail, but that's Tommy's office.
Yeah.
And she's going through his shit and taking his like pocketbook, and she lets him know that she sent him a truck with a white flag and with the bodies of his soldiers. And it's here where we really, we do get the Helen McCrory send off in a way.
Yeah.
The character send off. And
we do.
The question's answered, and I'm not going to speculate too much as to what would have happened if she had lived and her character would have had a chance. But we do find out that the IRA essentially killed Polly in order to remove Tommy's last crutch. And in a way, it's 100% true. It's 100% believable. And it completely, I don't know if they did this on purpose, but coincidentally makes sense that Michael would continue to carry on his war and vendetta against Tommy, considering that his botched plan led to his mother's death, right? Yeah. It's believable now in some sense why, but it was still believable before because Michael was kind of whipped by Gina.
Mm-hmm.
But my theory was wrong about the IRA lady kind of being on his side and being a potential ally. So that's one out the window for me because she turns out and just literally is the first time I think that Tommy's choices have led to his loved ones dying, except for Johnny. John Boy.
Yeah, but it wasn't his choices necessarily there.
That killed
right?
John like, Boy. Yeah.
It was. I mean, he was forced to kill the Shingretta's. What was it? Father or uncle or I don't even remember what he was to Luca.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just Tommy's actions that made that happen. There was a lot of other things in play. You know,
gotta
I was
say
when
something
I first
here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Really quick. Tommy's reaction here to the death of Polly says so much about how much he loved Polly, mm-hmm. and where he's at. Probably the worst day in his life. And a lot of pressure on Cillian Murphy. I can't imagine what the emotions were on set that day to shoot this scene, having spent 10 years with this woman on mm-hmm. set. And this is the send-off of her character, and she was very much the thread that ties the Shelbys together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because from right from the scene where we get Tommy's reaction to seeing Polly's body, which we do not see on camera or anything like that.
No.
We go straight to her funeral, which is in this very dark wood. Kind of looks like the one that he was by the fire with Grace behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's being buried and I guess a traditional like gypsy type of ceremony where
they burn him in the carriage thing.
Yeah,
that's what they did with John Boy as well.
Yeah, I forgot about that. You're right.
Yeah, you know, when I it was such a long hold on Tommy that entire shot, which I mean obviously was intentional, right? Like it was painful to watch. It's just rough.
He has to carry it. It's essentially. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's in good taste because I've never seen a show have to deal with this, I don't think, where a core character, the actor, passes away before they're able to finish the series. Mm-hmm. But in a way, they paid homage to her as an actress in a way that still kept you in the show. Mm-hmm. I do want to make a note in the funeral because you do get the full cast. I think you get your core cast of good guys and then your two kind of gray area characters with Michael and Gina.
Michael and Gina, yeah.
But you see Johnny Dog, Jeremiah, Charlie, yeah. Curly, Ada, yep. Lizzie, Arthur, Finn, Tommy, and Charlie and Ruby.
I was going to say Lizzie, she's there with the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do see that common thing where Ruby looks up at her father at the funeral of the horse and says, "Are you crying?" Mm-hmm. You know, in season 5, and here she looks up at him again. It's like, that's something. There's something there with that direction.
Hmm.
Finn Cole does a great job here, man. The actor who plays Michael.
Yeah, I have a lot more respect for him in this season so far than I did last season. But I think it's also because I kind of accepted him being the bad guy at this point.
Well, I see him as like a faux bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, because the thing that continues to resonate in this episode is that he chose so wrong. He chose so wrong. And by the way, this is the only appearance of Finn in this episode, which is interesting.
And I was just going to mention when we were before it was revealed to us that it was Polly that died. I'm like, who died? Who else died? I didn't see anybody who died. I'm like, did Finn die? Because he kind of went off somewhere at the end of the last episode of the last season. Get some drink. Get some girl.
We're going to kill
a fascist. And I mean, I hadn't seen him at all, but
I had a feeling that this was going to be the. When he said, "You've always had a crutch to lean on," I said, "It's Polly." Mm-hmm. And that's, they had to, obviously. She was just past the point of being able to be on the show at that point, you know?
Yeah.
So let's go into the next scene, scene 4, which is 4 years later, coincidentally, 1933. Yeah. I was going back and forth. I didn't know it was 34, but it has to be 33.
Yeah, it has to be 33. I mean, if you look up the end of the Prohibition, it was in 1933. So that makes sense. I was also gonna note, like, in the trailer that we saw for season 6, I feel like so many of the iconic shots we saw in there were all from this episode.
Season 1. I mean, from episode 1, right?
Almost every single one of them was from this episode.
A couple that weren't. Sunburnt Tommy, we still don't have that.
The canyon.
We don't have that canyon area.
Mm-hmm.
There's several shots that I'm thinking of in my head. The gunfire and some of the shots of Michael in the forest. So we do know Michael has to come out of prison.
Of course.
At some point here.
Yeah.
But we do get a time skip to Michelon Island, which is a French territory, a little bit north, somewhere like by Canada, north of the U.S., but with a history of bootlegging prior to Prohibition ending.
Mm-hmm.
And we see Tommy walking through the street, similar to the way he does in Birmingham here, with the reaction of the old lady looking out the window, and kind of a throwback to season 1 when he's going to Chinatown and getting on the horse.
We got the new pup in here too.
Well, I don't think that's his dog.
I mean, it's some dog. I don't know.
But that dog, damn it, if that dog doesn't fit with him well. Like, he needs to adopt that dog.
I mean, it is following him around pretty closely. I feel like everything that happens in here happens for a reason.
Can we find out what breed dog that is? Because I kind of want one. And I've been on a puppy fever lately.
I have no idea what it is.
Now, that pup, it's a black dog. And mm-hmm. I remember Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban when he's reading the tea leaves in Professor Trelawney's class that he gets the tea leaves that show a black dog, which is Sirius's... Sirius is whatever that figure is called, the animo, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
Animagus. But the black dog is, Animagus, whatever, yeah. Animagus. By the way, the scene here where Tommy talks to the commissioner in French, that's the moment I was like, oh, this guy is, he's James Bond. It's either him or it's going to be Idris Elba. Just to, it's a matter of whether Cillian Murphy wants to take on a role that's going to take another 10 years of his life. That's really the key here.
I mean, look, if you're going to go out like and end it on a James Bond series, right? Like,
well, he's about to be Oppenheimer. He's about to be Oppenheimer for Nolan.
I'm so excited to see that movie as well.
Which actually coincidentally started filming last week, the week that this is. Yeah, that's why he wasn't at the premiere of this, I'm assuming.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, when we saw the people on the boat.
I got to find what dog that is.
And we saw the guy with the mustache. My God, does that mustache make Michael look so different? For the entire time we saw the trailer, it never even crossed my mind that could have been Michael. I always thought it was like an Italian or something.
Really? I knew it was Michael. I knew it was because
I had no idea it was Michael. I could not picture him with a mustache like that.
Well, you see him later in the series. Let's not talk about the trailer because maybe people haven't seen it and tried to avoid it for a reason. Yeah. I like avoiding trailers when I can. Mm-hmm. But now that we're broadcasting the number one show about Peaky Blinders on Spotify and wherever you listen to podcasts.
People see it.
You know, we do have to. We have a moral responsibility to do so. So I'm talking up my ass here. Anyways, Tommy goes into this dank, dark-looking bar, which I would go to drink on a regular occasion if this was in my town.
For real. I want to go back to Invasive Species so bad.
Yo, shout out to Invasive Species in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Great bar.
They could sponsor an episode. It is great. If you're ever in Fort Lauderdale, I would
And we'll go get first rounds on us if you ever actually visit and see that.
Absolutely. As long as there's like only five of you at once.
Yeah, exactly. unless this is taking off. But
yeah,
true. We see Tommy in the bar. I just labeled it the angry bar, but it's really like the unemployed bar because these are all old bootleggers who have had their job stolen from them and they're blaming Shelby Company Limited. Of taking over the legal export import of whiskey and whatever other alcohol they were bootlegging before. We get this. I love the subtitle style of whenever they're speaking in French. Yeah. I'm totally gonna steal this in an edit on a film one day, and it'll be directly from this because in English they have it on the bottom, and then the French pops up and they float it near the person who's talking.
Yeah.
Now, great casting all around. The bartender actually reminds me of a good friend of mine, but Tommy orders water at the bar.
Ouch.
And this was the second WTF moment in the episode. First, when Tommy pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
Second, when he says water instead of whiskey, not the word with a W that I would have thought.
Nope.
And I was thinking to myself, is this a temporary thing? Is it just because he's going to meet Michael, or is this a new life, right?
Yeah. And I was let down.
I'm kind of disappointed. I'm going to be honest.
I want drunk Tommy. Come on.
I think we will get a drunk Tommy eventually in this episode one because he alludes to something here where the lead angry unemployed bootlegger approaches him and takes insult that he's ordering water because there's a trend in this episode. And I, you know, wrote kind of like a little metaphorical statement about this.
Mm-hmm.
Where Tommy has sworn off alcohol now from what he says is 4 years, which I'm assuming is after the point that Polly died. Now, what was I going to say? In this episode, he is pretty much demanded to drink three times by three different people. And it's like this, whenever you're trying to do something positive or what you think is positive for your life, there's like this supernatural force that tries to get you to relapse into that thing you don't want to do. If you're on a diet and you don't want to eat, it's like that's somebody when all else has a cupcake that's right when everyone's like inviting you out to like, yo, you want to go get a burger, man? You want to go get some fries? You know, like that's when everything starts to like come your way. Mm-hmm. I can imagine it's to the next degree when you're somebody who drinks a lot of alcohol or does drugs or something like that.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Now, his confrontation with the man at the bar is all about the fact that these men, the men of this island, made their livings and are pretty much in a place that you can kind of understand where they're coming from. They don't know where their living's going to come from with Prohibition being over, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy is, we don't know his full intention here, but he definitely is not putting up with, he's not patient for this, which is a second part of his James Bond audition here. Just send this, submit this in when they say,
honestly,
hey.
Honestly, like this is, this. I could totally see this being a James Bond.
It is. It's totally like, a James Bond
whole
moment.
Scene.
Tarantino-esque with the subtitle style, by the way.
I could see Daniel Craig doing.
Yeah, definitely. When he slices. All right. So he's given a whiskey to essentially say, all right, since you're going to take our business, I would demand that you say a toast to the poor people of Miquelon.
Which, did you realize how much freaking whiskey they poured in that cup? Yeah. It's a glass, like, water cup.
Yeah.
And it's just full of whiskey at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think Tommy's unfamiliar with drinking that much whiskey.
No, but you got to have it in a nicer looking cup at least. Come on.
You think Tommy's not drinking here because he is so furious with Michael that if he was drinking whiskey, he would probably blow his brains out here?
No, because of what's said later on in the episode, by Lizzie, which, you know, I'll kind of get to once we get there, because the statement is so true, and it's kind of like, you know, like, I just don't know what to expect with Tommy in this season because of what's actually happening and what she says as well, right?
Funny that he didn't quit cigarettes.
Of course not. I mean, look, cigarettes and tobacco is healthy for you, right? At least it wasn't that time.
Yeah.
I do like Tommy's line where he's basically like, you know, I've become a calmer man.
Yeah, I love this scene. when he slices the man open who tries to smash a bottle across Tommy's head, he says he forced whole alcohol 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, Tommy, this is the James Bond part where he shoots him and then shoots the bird that comes out.
Yeah. The accuracy.
And then the camera whips around and he, you know, that's just a great shot, man. That whip over to the girl.
Did you notice the way that they animated the text away when the camera whipped back?
No, I missed it, but I can't rewind because of the way I'm watching right now.
Don't worry about rewinding it. You'll see it again when you get to your 17th time.
Dude, I'm totally watching this at least twice more this week. It was just so good. It's so good, man.
It was really good.
All right, so moving on, he makes a statement to these men and essentially is now needing to prep the room for Michael. We now get the arrival of Michael, who's with 5 goons. I failed to mention that before. But he's like with 5 or 6 goons from the U.S., it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes an interesting point here because he says, all right, we're late. He's always early. Let's go. He makes that point about Tommy. Every good book that has like a mythically cool character, they include details like that. The Count of Monte Cristo, when he survives and reinvents himself as the Count of Monte Cristo, there's a specific characteristic of his character that he never arrives early. He never arrives late. He always arrives at the exact time. So if he says he's going to arrive at 9:33, he will be there at 9:33. And it's like a characteristic of him. Yeah. And so every mythically cool character has that. Lupin has that too, if you notice some of the details about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Tommy will be in that like pantheon of mythically cool characters when it's all said and done.
Yeah. He's always really, no matter what it takes. How was The Count of Monte Cristo? I've seen the book so many times.
Oh,
I thought about buying it.
One of my favorite books ever. Harry Potter, and then The Count of Monte Cristo.
Wow.
That okay. order.
All right.
That's high regard, my friend. That's high regard.
Yeah, anything near Harry Potter.
Yeah. Now, Tommy mentions that in times of personal conflict, I sometimes revert back to my former ways. It's like Tommy's become kind of Buddhist Zen. And, but I do think it alludes to the fact that he will have a point of personal conflict that is too much to avoid his old ways in this season. And that'll be very fan service-y when we see him order that whiskey again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we just saw him revert to his old ways when he just cut the guy's face, shot a pigeon and what I think was like a phone or something on the wall.
Yeah. Now, scene 6 is the meeting. It's interesting to me that Michael is shown with a bunch of cronies and Tommy's there alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
This kind of points to the fact that Michael's insecure in terms of being around Tommy alone. and also mm-hmm. points to the fact that Michael is not really in charge here. He's kind of like he's an in-between, but he's definitely not the shot caller in this thing. If he expected to go to America as the shot caller of the operation, mm-hmm. he was sorely mistaken.
Yeah.
Sorely mistaken.
Yeah. When I first, you know, saw like all of the scenes up to the point where, you know, Michael enters the room and sits down, right? Like I always got the impression, you know, he was the man in charge, right? Like he's he's the guy out front, like kind of leading the group on the boat as they
up
come
until
here.
Now, right?
Everybody else enters the room before him, right? I mean, you want to clear the room, make sure it's safe before the boss walks in, right?
Well, you do assume he has some sort of, right? Like he's
But it's more so that he's being protected than anything else. It's not so much that it's because he's in charge of anything.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Now he does remind before we get to this next scene that just popped up.
Mm-hmm.
He does remind Tommy of the fact that his mother's killers are still alive, and Tommy tells him, like, you know, when you're dealing with a very powerful enemy, you have to wait and you have to strike. You know, you have to wait to strike.
Mm-hmm.
We do get the family scene after this, where we see how the family's doing. Where is everybody else at now? We see a bunch of kids. I love actually this scene because it actually feels happy in the Shelby household. You got a bunch of kids running around. It's Christmas time. Johnny Dog's kids are there. He's got a shit ton of kids, apparently. And a bunch of wives, too.
A lot of kids there. I mean, come on. I don't know what the gypsy life is like, but why not? Yeah. Did you also hear that the projector provided to them was from Charlie Chaplin?
Yeah. Yep. I got that bit. They mention his connection with Charlie Chaplin a couple times. Charlie Chaplin mentions him at a dinner in New York, according to Winston Churchill. Did you notice the subtitles are different colors?
Yeah.
Interesting. I've never seen that done on a streamer before, but I like it.
I'm not 100% sure why.
I like it.
The color of the scene.
I think
it was very blue when it was in the bar, and the titles were yellow, and it's really warm here, and I think they're white now.
No, it's an indication of who's speaking and the order of which they speak in the scene. Because they're the same colors in each scene.
Yeah.
Now, we do see Lizzie and Ada are picking up the pieces, essentially, of where Tommy and Polly left. Yep. Specifically, Ada, I wrote a couple of notes here that she is trying to pick up the pieces that Polly left.
She's becoming the new Polly.
She's so kind that it's not. She can't do it.
I agree. But she's not as mature as Polly was. She's young still, right? She's still really young.
You're right. She is heading that direction. I was very sad to see that Arthur is opposite position of Tommy. He is in the worst state I've ever seen him in the show.
I was sad to see that, but at the same time, it's exactly what I expected.
Yeah,
seen his character continue to degrade through season 5, and has just become more addicted to substances, just worse off in general.
Yeah,
with everything going on with Linda.
Yeah, also. I think he was injecting opium in this episode because I saw an injector.
He's now addicted to opium. Yeah,
yeah. We'll get back to that because that's scene 7, but. The next continuation of scene 6 happens where Tommy is laying out his pitch to Michael's cronies, really. And we find out that the true boss here is Jack Nelson. Another one of my predictions coming true. I mentioned Joe Kennedy in the predictions of the season. Jack Nelson is based on Joe Kennedy 100%.
Interesting.
100%. I haven't verified that, but...
I know Jack Nelson is a fictional character made up for this show, just like Tommy Shelby is, but the relationships that the character may have are mostly going to be based on reality.
They're based on Joe Kennedy, 100%. Mm. Being in the Oval Office, going to the UK, he's an ambassador there, okay? It's 100% got to be based on Joe Kennedy. Now, which means Gina's a Kennedy. Now, his pitches, now that Prohibition is over...
Mm-hmm.
Drugs should start inflowing and take the place of the money that they were going to make through Prohibition, right? Prohibition bootlegging. And so the deal is, let's sell opium. I'll be your supplier. I'm Tommy. And I get the purest opium delivered to my warehouse in Liverpool. And I have connections with the French police here in Michelin because I served with this man and I'm paying him 12 million francs a year, I think he said. And... essentially, that's what he's pitching to them. He wants to do business with Jack Nelson, who he seems to have a high level of respect for. I would say the only other opponent that he's shown this much respect for, two, Billy Kimber and Winston Churchill.
Yeah. And as we find out a little later in the episode, Jack Nelson has achieved
what Tommy's
been trying to achieve. He's risen through the ranks, have become of like a gangster you know, sort of like criminal, mm-hmm. to a powerful, legitimate businessman, now into politics, and his name has now been scrubbed of it, right? And so Tommy, like, that's all of what Tommy was trying to do in the last season. Like, he was trying to become that politician.
And hasn't Tommy gotten his past erased?
I was going to say he did mention in this same scene that, you know, it was erased just like mine was. So I still think though Jack Nelson is just, it's a lot farther. Like, yeah, he's gone a lot farther than Tommy.
He's probably like 5 to 10 years ahead of Tommy in terms of where he's at. But you do get the sense that Jack Nelson is a feared figure, because they mentioned that just mentioning his name is worthy enough of getting him killed.
Yeah.
We also see Michael kind of jolt back in fear when he says his name. So we know who the boss is, really. We know who our players are. It's going to be Jack Nelson, Oswald Mosley, Jimmy McCavern. Let's put Alfie Solomons in there. Toss him in there because he's still alive.
Definitely Alfie Solomons. I mean, again, like, we hear who he says he's going to sell to. If you don't want to take this deal.
Well, I kind of want that to happen anyways. You know what I mean?
I hope it does, right? Because I want to see Alfie and Tommy team up.
Yeah, same. Which I did not know the Solomons had that kind of reach on the east side of Boston.
I had no idea.
But there must be another Solomons that we'll get introduced to as well if we're going to get introduced to Jack Nelson. Now, we find out that Jack makes the calls on everything here, and they're trying to reiterate that to Tommy while also treating him like he's the small man in the room, trying to peer pressure him into drinking whiskey. And it's interesting to me that these guys are telling him to, you know, act like a man when this guy is the most experienced person in this room in terms of dealing with this BS. But I got to give it to Tommy. He kind of comes back to, all right, so when he pulls the trigger, he essentially betrays what I know of him, which is he's not the guy who's going to actually drink the whiskey. Even if he wanted to drink the whiskey, because you told him to drink the whiskey, he's not going to drink the whiskey.
Definitely not.
And so he gets away with what he wants to get away with, and he sows dissent in their ranks by actually saying a poem that he's like,
oh, I love it.
Right? And he actually is directing that at Michael. Right? What is the poem? He says,
"There's something I had a friend, and I can't remember it." And then it talks about, now I have a foe.
Yeah, he's about to say it, but he talks about my wrath. I told my friend, and it did go. I had a wrath against my foe, and it did grow, or something like that. And is it not somewhat kind of like
I was angry with my friend. I told my wrath did end. And then he goes on to say,
I was angry with my foe.
I told it not.
My wrath did grow. Now, is this not a fig leaf for Michael? Is this not like, stop your ways here, my friend? Or is this you've already crossed the path of no return?
I think he's crossed the path of no return. I'm sorry. After everything that has gone on, all of the opportunities that Tommy's given Michael to come back, to prove himself, it's just not gone well.
Can I mention how killable each one of these cronies looks, especially the main one?
Oh my gosh. With those porcelain looking teeth.
Oh, I want to punch him in the mouth. I want to punch him in the mouth, man.
Yeah.
I think, you know, kids can learn from Tommy. Say no to drugs, but do it like Tommy Shelby. Recite a poem. You know what I mean? And then on the way out, tell somebody that, you know, that there's an informant in their organization. I feel bad for the man with the bleeding heart tattoo
with Maria written
in
red.
Did you notice that he bypasses Michael and tells the main crony about the informant? It's almost like a slap in the face to Michael about who's really in charge. And I love that he smacks him on the way out on the back.
Of course. Why not? You're still the boss.
Yeah. Well, on his way out, Tommy kind of makes amends with the men at the bar. And I do like the kind of some of the symbolism here. First and foremost, he's made his statement. He gives the men an opportunity of employment again and leaves the bartender some money for the damages and some. And then another bird flies in that is, he reverses all of the damage he did. He gives them a job. He pays for the damages and for the drink that he didn't order. And then a bird flies in as if like to say that the bird came back to life in a sense. So this is like Tommy, you know, in a sense, reversing all of... It's the tying loose ends thing that we talked about.
Exactly.
He's trying to reverse the stuff that he's done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Arthur 100%. And Ada, the continued dynamic of the Shelby family.
Yeah, again, like still the disappointment here. Like
it's like tragic. Is this an injector on the table? Take a look at the right side of the table when you see the shot of Arthur in the Santa suit, which makes it even more sad.
It's hilarious. Yeah. But let's see. I mean, she was like, I'm not Polly, but I'm still your fucking sister.
You notice a lot of the camera shots are off kilter in some sense in the way that they're angled.
Yeah, this one I noticed right away when I first started watching it.
I don't know what the purpose was, but I think it's just things are out of control.
Yeah, I mean, he's so out of it. Like, I think it was just to kind of emphasize.
Look at the out on the table, Zach. Is that an a needle?
I can't tell.
That would be the next level of Arthur's downfall if he's actually injecting it at this point.
Well, I mean, he's graduated from cocaine, which what made him so much better, and alcohol. Yeah. Now he's into opium, which is a lot stronger. Right? Like, I mean, we've known that forever.
And no appearance of Linda in this episode. So
I noticed that too. I was going to ask you a little bit ago. Did you see Linda in here, or did I just miss it? I didn't see her. But I'm pretty sure we saw her in the trailer.
I don't recall her in the trailer.
Maybe we didn't. And I know she was at the premiere.
I thought she was in this episode, but it was Gina walking through prison. Yeah. At first.
You know, one other thing that I think we should have picked up on when we watched the trailer was the shot of the woman from the Angels of Retribution or the IRA.
I did pick up on that, but I thought I was wrong.
I know we saw her, but I feel like that, like we should have paid more attention to that, right? Because we've been wondering, like, you know, who betrayed Tommy?
But I remember I said
she was going to play such a major character in this season. I'm not surprised that it was her, though.
I was wrong. I had predicted the opposite. I had predicted that she did that favor for him with Michael on the boat out of goodwill. But it does go to the fact that if someone's on screen in Peaky Blinders, they may have a bigger role later.
Yeah.
But there's still a rat. Because how did the IRA find out about the plan? That was not covered. So there is still a rat.
Maybe that is the guy that Finn was with. Billy Grade. Yeah.
Now, in scene 8, we get...
Actually, you know what? It has to be Billy Grade. There's literally nobody else it could be that I could think of.
Okay. Lizzie does mention that Tommy's not been the same since Polly died. He's given up whiskey. He's not himself. His voice is dead all the time.
Yeah.
Which goes to say that Tommy's he's a shell of himself.
Yeah. The line that she said that I liked was, no more Polly, no more drink, no more Tommy. That's exactly what I was thinking when we saw this. Like, because Tommy's not Tom anymore. He's somebody else. I don't know who he is yet.
You know, in this scene when he says, comrade, you want a drink? And he says, yes, I do, but I don't drink anymore. I thought this scene he was going to finally drink.
So did I.
But here he says, what does he say about in regards to it? I have business. So I guess he doesn't drink on business anymore. Is it so bad that I want him to have a drink? I'm as bad as the three people who try to get him to drink in this episode.
Hey, but we want him to drink.
All right, I got to talk about this scene. Okay.
Yeah, do it. I'll let you take it away.
Okay. We see Carl Shelby looking up at a portrait of his uncle. Ooh. Carl is the son of Ada and Freddie Thorne. He's grown up here. He's got a deep voice now. It's fitting. And I got to say, my prediction is it's looking good right now, because I think that what's happening here is that we're seeing a young Carl who is eventually going to take the baton from his uncle. And we get like this symbolism with the phone ringing that it's almost like the mantle of responsibility. I want to pick it up, but my mom has to pick it up for now. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I know, I totally agree. And I've agreed with the assessment that Carl's going to eventually take over, but it kind of, I feel like it makes me think that my initial thought was right. Like, if Carl's going to take over the business and take over everything, it's because Tommy has to die.
I don't think Tommy's going to die. Was that my prediction at the end? I said that both of them
lived. You thought both of them lived. I said at least one of them will die.
Arthur prediction is not looking good based on this one episode. You're looking good on a bottle of whiskey right there.
Thank you.
Because it's not looking good for me.
We'll end up one and one at least, potentially. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Well, we got, because the next scene, at this point, my bet's looking really bad. So any takers on the money line there? Because Arthur's passed out an opium den. I don't know how much has gone on in this one day because it's kind of disjointed with what's going on. But he goes from being in a Santa suit in the kitchen to being in an opium den. So I'm assuming like a day has passed or something. All right?
It's possible. Yeah.
Now, she finds him passed out high, and she makes them aware that he is not to be served anymore, which I do hope is him getting back on track after this as they start to cut him off, because next episode should be Tommy back in London based off of what happens in the this episode.
Yeah.
Now, we did not mention that Tommy is the tip-off to getting Michael arrested later in this episode. He does tip off the local police in Boston.
Yeah.
That there's a man who will be carrying a briefcase of opium. And so Tommy's just trying to mess with a certain individual that we'll mention later.
By the way, he did that in the same scene that the guy was like, comrade, do you want a drink? Did you realize that Tommy says, when they basically ask him, you know, who's telling us, he says, a concerned citizen. Mr. And Jones. He called himself Mr. Jones.
Yeah, yeah. Which to me was funny because that means that he wants Michael to know that he let him out, or that he tipped him off. But it's pretty funny to me, that little throwback. Mm-hmm. Like nothing is done for no reason.
Yeah,
I love Gina's entrance here because it's also like an ode to her because she's a freaking A-list badass now in the acting scene.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets an epic intro, you know? She's going to see Michael in prison.
Of course.
Who's got a nice cell, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice cell. Very roomy. He's got a window.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. He's got some lights in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're wealthy, right?
It does look cold, though.
Sort of special treatment. You know, I was just going to mention something. So we kind of called the beginning of the season. We were like, you know, do we have a time skip or a time jump? Or do we pick up right where we left off? And it was both.
Right? Yeah,
like we picked up right where we left off. And then we skipped 4 years. And Gina decides to call Tommy here the devil.
Yes.
Does that mean that he's taken Oswald Mosley's place and that part of the story's gone?
No.
Is that to happen?
No, that's not it. It's just she's calling him the devil. That's it. I mean, he's with the black dog earlier, which is a symbol of the devil. And then his daughter has, you know, as we see the turn that happens later. I looked into that a little bit. I did some preliminary Google searching of that phrase.
I didn't.
I cleared my search history because I was a little paranoid. No, I didn't. I did not do that. But she just doesn't like Tommy. That's all I took it as, really. She doesn't give a crap. Now, at this point, I'm saying Gina has to be a Kennedy. I literally wrote this in my notes. I put Jack Nelson's based on Joe Kennedy. And then she goes to prison, but she noticeably does not bail him out. So that means that they're delaying bailing him out.
Yeah.
And she reams Michael. Like, this is just a continuation of what we thought was there last season where Michael was whipped. Now Gina has shown her face very completely. Like, she's a devil maybe. But she's revealed and now she's speaking. She's definitely, I would say, a more prominent star in this season than Michael will be.
I was going to say, I kind of felt bad for Michael in this scene.
He brought it upon himself.
She's controlling him. It is very true. He did.
His son's name is Lawrence. He deserves it.
In charge.
His son's name is Lawrence. I hope you don't have a Lawrence. Do you have a Lawrence in your family?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Thankfully.
Well, she doesn't approve of his business with Tommy. And she thinks that Tommy's taking on her uncle and taking on Boston. But Michael reveals that the only reason he's really going to do business with Tommy is to settle the score. In terms of avenging his mother.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't pick up on this on my first watch, which is odd. But in the following scene when Gina leaves the prison.
Yeah.
She's in the same outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Which means she just left the prison. And she's dancing her ass off in this Gatsby palace, getting drunk.
Oh my gosh.
Blasting music. Do you think she cares about her husband being in prison?
I don't think she gives a crap, really, honestly.
Look at her. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like it's so clear that she does not care about her husband at all. And I actually think that based off of some of the things that happened in this episode, she probably splits from Michael in this season.
You think?
Yep. All
right.
Hands down. And this scene really, although we do see where her mindset is in regards to Michael.
Mm-hmm.
We see her encounter with Tommy, who happens to be in Boston now, and His first and only stop seems, or no, he has two stops. His first stop is to see Gina, who is the third person in the episode who offers him whiskey, and he declines once again.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I noticed in this scene is that Gina's trying to take the bull by the horns, and she's really trying to make Tommy, like, she's trying to dominate Tommy in this conversation, which does not go her way.
No, it really don't. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
She's, I feel like she's kind of playing out of her depth.
Tommy saying water is like, what is the equivalent? It just feels like a fish out of water whenever he says water.
Yeah, I know.
It's just,
I can't think of an analogy for it, but yeah. I mean, that's, it definitely feels out of character for him, which is why, like, again, I'm trying to not expect anything from him in the season, because I don't know what to expect. If he won't even freaking drink whiskey, he's not the Tommy that I've grown to know over the last five seasons.
He's a wild card.
Yeah.
It's true. He is kind of a wild card when he's sober. Mm-hmm. Right? But his voice and his demeanor is different as sober Tommy. I don't know if that's deliberate, but it is just different.
Well, I would imagine it is. I mean, because, like, I think it was him who mentioned a few characteristics about himself when he did drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's much sharper now. And what was the line that he said? I've learned that whiskey is gasoline for the engines in your brain, or something like that.
Yeah, something fuel engines for the fire. I don't know what it is
in your head, something like that.
Now, in this scene, Gina really plays up Jack Nelson and how her she's essentially they're given Jack Nelson's character the Marlon Brando treatment. Okay, in Apocalypse mm-hmm. Now, where all you hear about is Colonel Kurtz, and you hear all these stories, and then by the time you see him on screen, he's larger than life, you know?
Yeah.
Jack Nelson's going to be larger than life by the time we see him, because we see that he went through the ranks, and now he went from being a bootlegger to being in the Oval Office, and that he can't have cocaine on his shoes when he's walking through those doors. Mm-hmm. So Tommy is still, he doesn't seem to want an issue with him, because he continues to pay him respect, but he did that to Kimber too. Yeah. And it's essentially, I can respect you, but I can also kill you. It's mm-hmm. one of those things. So I wouldn't put that off the table just yet about this guy being completely based on Joe Kennedy. I think it's inspired, but not necessarily 100% based off of Tommy's past and what I think will happen with him. But what do you think about Gina calling Tommy boy?
She's just trying to assert dominance in the conversation.
Yeah. Did you get any sort of like Gina hitting on Tommy here at any moment?
No. I think she's playing the cards that she knows she has.
When she says the thing about falling on your knees and that kind of thing, I was like, hmm. I didn't think that was like a flirty thing, but she made it sound kind of sexual. And he kind of threw it back at her when he said, are you on your knee? You seem to be on your knees for your uncle, not for your husband.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that seems to be true.
Very accurate.
Not in a sexual way, but definitely her allegiance. Look at what she's living in, for goodness sake. Tommy does flip the table back on her here, where he says, look, I gave up Michael to the police, and I did it just because the hell I wanted to, because I wanted to give your uncle a dilemma. Like, he was just feeling like doing it, which immediately shows us who Gina is. She's just, you know, she's out of her depths. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
But he wanted to give Jack Nelson a dilemma. If he bails him out, it's a bad look for him politically.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't bail him out, it's a bad look for him criminally. The gangs think that he's gotten soft, right?
Yep.
So Tommy immediately takes control here, and then he adds the little cherry on top. He says, and if he doesn't buy my opium, I have great connections with the East Boston Jews and the Solomons, and I will sell them the opium.
Yeah.
And she, at this point, is completely sobered up, just like Tommy, about, about how much of a wild card it is. Oh, man, this episode was great.
I had no idea Alfie had ties with the East Boston Jews.
It's got to be family, not necessarily Alfie, though.
No, it would definitely have to be family. I didn't mean Alfie specifically, but Alfie's the one that has ties to him. Therefore, Tommy knows him, knows of them, at least. So he has what I would imagine to be very close connections.
He does mention that Gina is Jack's favorite niece.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that plays out later, but I would have to say that he probably prioritizes Gina over Michael. So yeah. I don't know what that means for Michael.
Are you calling Michael a niece?
Hmm?
I said, are you calling Michael a niece?
More priority for Gina over Michael.
Yeah.
No, I'm calling Michael a pawn. That's what I'm calling him. That he's replaceable. Gina's not replaceable. But Michael can be left in jail and Gina can remarry.
Of course.
That's what I'm trying to say.
What a way to clean your name of criminal activity.
Okay. Scene 13.
Who
Tick Namora. Is
the woman?
Oh, it's a hooker. Bed. Just a hooker. But she's hot. She owned her moment.
Got right out of bed, got dressed and left.
But she comes up to get her money and she looks.
I missed the money transaction.
Tick Namora. Obang Obang? is that what it is?
Something like that. I couldn't quite catch it.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously not a thing you want to hear your daughter say. Because this scene takes the cake, man. This scene takes the cake.
I really felt like we were getting the old Tommy back here for a moment.
I wrote the exact same thing. I said, this is the first time we've seen a reemergence of old Tommy here. And by the way, I did not look at your notes. Okay. So completely coincidental.
That's okay. I actually didn't write in my notes.
Oh, you
I
didn't?
Just had it in my head. No. Yeah.
I wrote that in mine because the scene's completely calm. We get Tommy who wants to see his family. He misses his daughter. Mm-hmm. But we find out that she's sick. She has a fever. And she's delirious. Oh, this is the money exchange part, but maybe she doesn't show herself. Anyways, turns out she's saying something while she was delirious, which is a gypsy phrase. I looked it up. Essentially, it's, what does it mean? It's something about, it could mean death. It could mean, like, there's a lot of different things it could mean, but mora comes from the Latin word, which means death or something like that. So I think Tommy thinks it as a danger of death for his daughter, which is why he flips out. Man, when this scene takes a change of tone, I was like, the season is bringing it all. Because we still get, this is Tommy switching plans completely. So we do not get a completely composed and controlled Tommy. He's still controlled by some former things. He hasn't released everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we do see a Tommy who seems to be more grounded. He wants to carry his daughter. He's talking about that. And it just completely turns. It's like just like out of nowhere, we get like this moment of conflict that arises. Yeah. That is so, it feels so harmless at first, but just explodes out of nowhere. It goes 0 to 60. Are you doing research on the phrase?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't look it up because I kind of missed exactly what was said.
Are you scared of looking it up?
Am I scared of looking? Why would I be scared of looking it up? I don't think I'm going to see anybody with green eyes.
A superstitious thing? I still think you should prank Michaela by just start saying that in the middle of the night.
I'd get kicked out.
Yeah. No, messing around. But honestly, that thought ran through my mind while I was looking it up. I was like, what am I looking up right now? Am I looking up some sort of gypsy freaking curse? Can Google wipe this? He freaks out, long story short here, and my qualms about Johnny Dogs not being loyal were thrown out the window in this scene because Tommy essentially is like, listen to Johnny Dogs by all means, and then he starts talking about all sorts of witchcraft, like put a black Madonna around her neck, keep her away from the rivers, keep her away from the horses, keep her out of school, and she mentions a man with green eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's about.
I wrote on my notes, like, you know, is the man with green eyes Jack Nelson?
No, I think it's the devil. I think it's the devil. Because what's happening here is there's the light flickers.
So Oswald.
Does he have green eyes?
I don't know. I mean, but the only people we've heard compared to the devil at this point is Tommy.
I don't think that matters. I think it's representative of death and a threat to their life. Now, it might be a metaphor. But I really think it has to do here that Tommy he's superstitious as a gypsy, and he believes in all this. And what also happens in the scene is the light flickers, and we get this sense that Polly's in the room with him, and he starts to talk to her.
Yeah.
Which means that Ruby has inherited the second sight that Polly has. Because they're always, remember how they're always revering Polly? She's always predicting that Ada's pregnant and she knows the gender, and then that deleted scene that if you guys have not watched by now, shows that there's going to be a war with Tommy and Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tommy mentioned something here and I had to write it down, and maybe you know what he means. He puts, "I know I'm trying to get out, Paul. They're coming for me." What is that about? He mentions that. He says that to Pauly, or the spirit of Pauly.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth is that about? Is it that he's trying to die again? Is he trying to get out of the... Is he trying to escape his crimes? What is that about?
Well, I don't think it's that he's trying to die again. I think it's more so that he's trying to get out of you know, the political party, or the getting out of the criminal history, right? Because, I mean, right? Like, if they are coming for him, it wouldn't be to stop him from killing himself or anything like that.
You might be right about the Mosley thing. If he's trying to get out of that political thing, maybe the Irish are synonymous with green, the color green.
Mm.
The IRA is part of the... They're pretty much the ones pulling the strings there with keeping everybody in line.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know what their historical influence was during the lead up to World War II.
Whoa. What was the name of the IRA woman? Do we not know?
Swain. While you look that up, I'm going to talk about the final scene of this episode. Tommy visits Michael in prison, informs him. Essentially, Tommy visits him pretty much to kind of gloat in Michael's face of the control he has over his life and kind of do like a little victory lap around him. But I also think that Tommy has other intentions here. Mm-hmm. He tells him that Jack has no intention of bailing him out based off of what would it look like for him in the Oval Office. And then he also tells him that Jack is on his way to London with five people that he's bought passage for, because Tommy knows this because he apparently has insiders in Jack Nelson's camp. But he's taking his wife, his mistress, I think it's FDR who's in power at this time, Gina, and himself. So no Michael. Michael has been axed, which I think this is the final nail in his coffin that shows that he has chosen his allegiance incorrectly. Agreed?
Mm. Yeah.
Tommy also kind of rubs it in his face and says, "I have no limitations." It's great. It's great. Tommy really does feel like he has no limitations, and we see that in just everything he does. But he also rubs it in his face again. It kind of goes back to like the little thing with Gina. "Gina's coming to London, Michael. I'll be happy to show her the sights." He's kind of alluding to some friskiness there with Gina, right?
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in the season. I'm going to be 100% honest. 100%. Wouldn't be surprised.
No.
Now, it's FDR in power at this time. I'm almost 100% positive. Let me look it up.
I'll look it up. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yes, 1933.
Correct.
1933.
Yeah. Franklin D.
So
Roosevelt.
Who's his son? FDR's son. Are we going to meet his son too?
I do not know.
Franklin D. Roosevelt.
I'm not too familiar with
FDR Jr.
in the family tree there.
Now, could it be that Jack Nelson's just trying to hook up Gina with FDR's son? That's what I think's happening. Why not?
Why though?
Because Michael's going to be out of the picture.
Not necessarily.
I think he is.
I don't know how that would really play into the current plot. I don't see that.
I don't think it'll be a big piece, but I just think it's like a little subplot. Why would he bring FDR's son and Gina's there and her husband's in prison? It's because Jack Nelson's always thinking about generations and what he's leaving behind. A man like him's always thinking about the legacy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So would he rather the son-in-law who just got busted for smuggling opium, or would he rather FDR's son, the son of the current sitting president?
Well, of course. I don't know if... I just don't know. Like, I feel like Gina would be removed from the picture and from the story if that were to happen. Because what significance would she play with
Tom? No. I don't think that she's going to play a significance in terms of the final plot. I don't really see it. I mean, I would be surprised if she doesn't, but I personally don't see where she fits in here, other than maybe we'll find out next episode since she's coming to London. But that does conclude episode 1 of season 6. Mm-hmm. All-time great?
I think so, honestly. Like, I think this definitely tops first episode, first season for sure. Not just in terms of production quality, but it was written really well. The acting was great. The set design was I mean, that is kind of production quality. That was great. But all in all, one of my top favorites. You?
I'd have to agree. Every season has its, you know, has its like moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of expectations and living up to them, this one probably takes the cake because my expectations were like astronomical. Like it was it would have been easy to fall short of my expectations of like where this pilot should have been.
Yeah.
And they, to me, they just did it without a hitch, man. They killed it. Now, I was looking back at my season 6 predictions. Okay, I've got my season 6 predictions. Tommy defeats Mosley. Tommy's redemption. Michael dies or ends up in prison. So that one is already correct. He's in prison. Looking good here. All of my poly ones are wrong.
Yeah, that was the thing that I was kind of disappointed about. I thought they had time to film some things before she passed, but apparently not.
Mm-mm.
But I do think they
did the best they could.
They did a good job.
It's a terrible situation.
It really is.
Arthur finds peace with a new woman or redemption with Linda. Linda's out the picture, so I don't know what happened there.
At the moment, she has at least.
I put Ada gives birth to her baby and finds her place next to Tommy in the business. Now, she does give birth to her baby, but it's off camera in the time skip. We do see younger's child. And she is very much the new Polly in the business.
Yeah.
While Tommy's out of town, it's her. Arthur's a mess. Okay.
You do have your one bet of Al Capone as a deciding factor in the war against Tommy. I said no Capone.
It's looking good. That one is looking good because especially now that we have Jack Nelson, there is a connection there with Joe Kennedy in the Chicago scene that has to come into play in the 1930s. It has to. Has to. Because Is that a bet? What were the three bets that will land some winning bottles of booze here? Maybe you should do bottles of water now.
There's only two bets. Yeah. Bottles of water. Yeah, why not? Some Evian.
Yeah.
Your two bets are Arthur and Tommy both survive and Arthur finds a new woman to calm his mind. Your second bet is Al Capone is a deciding factor in the war against Tommy. My bet was basically the opposite of both of those, right? Either Arthur or Tommy dies.
That's not, you shouldn't be able to hedge your bet like that, but it doesn't matter.
You gave me
that. I did give permission on that.
You can do that. So that one has approval. The other one is just no Capone. I don't think Al Capone's going to come into play here.
God, I'm looking at 1-1 right now because Arthur looks such in bad shape right now. He looks like I should have done the Carl one, but the thing is we both agreed on that. So I think that's why we chose not to do that.
Exactly. We both thought the same thing. And it's the most logical sense. Finn, first of all, he's nowhere to be seen in this season, aside from like what the shot at the
I did funeral, that, I think. That was one of my predictions. I said he's met with a tough choice between Tommy and Michael, but he chooses Tommy. Mm-hmm. That's looking good right now.
Yeah.
I also put Gina and Mosley have an affair or hookup. That's less
of a prediction and more of a who was he actually screwing.
No, I found out that at least according to Reddit sleuths that wasn't her. But and I also paused it several times to make sure that it wasn't her.
That's why you paused it.
Listen, honestly, the Gina affair is looking good, but not with Mosley. I think that there's another affair that happens with Gina.
Well, I don't think she cares about Michael. I really
definitely
don't.
Not. What the heck?
She cares about power. She's hungry for power. I think Paulie called that. In the last season.
I think anybody with eyes could have called that.
Well, but nobody else did. That's the point. Beyond that, the other thing that you thought was when McCavern dies, he'll die as if he was crucified. And it's just in the position, not necessarily pinned to a cross.
Should have put that one as a wager.
But you also had... Man, for somebody who likes a lot of characters, you predicted a lot of deaths too. Michael dies and his child, and then you also wrote Finn dies. I don't know if
the name Lawrence count as some sort of like Does that count as like something wrong with?
I don't know. We'll wait till we see his face.
I'm just kidding. Actually, yeah. I know some cool Lawrences.
We'll see what comes out of the rest of the season. But I'm super, super excited for the next episode. Let's kind of hold off any predictions that we might have. We can do like a bonus episode for this episode, if anything, and just kind of chat about what we expect to have happen.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Might be a fun little thing.
So our episode format to the audience now, I talk. Our episode format is going to change. We're going to do one of these recaps every Monday to post on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And we will be doing, actually, there will be one Monday that I cannot do.
It's fine. It'll be roughly Monday, Tuesday for recording and posting the recap.
Yeah. And then we will also do a bonus episode each Wednesday, which will kind of just be a lead up and our predictions for the episode that's yet to come. So
for sure.
What are we scheduled for in terms of this ending? We have...
What do you mean?
First episode. Well, there's six episodes, right?
Yeah, six episodes in every season. There's six seasons and six episodes.
So April 3rd should be the last episode, unless the BBC does this thing where they do a gap in between the season and they give you like a week off.
Mm.
Interesting. Some shows do that where they do take like a week or 2 week break.
I was gonna say that's a day before my birthday, so that would be a really nice present to have this thing finish
April 3rd
on my birthday. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Well, you might be getting a whiskey bottle for your birthday, my friend.
All right then. All right. We'll see.
All right.
I kind of hope I do, but at the same time, like, I don't like the outcome of Tommy or Arthur dying, but
yeah, it's not a good bet to win.
It's not a good bet. It's just, I feel like it's going to happen.
You would be sad drinking.
I would be. But I mean, it's also a good reason to drink, right?
Not really.
All right, a couple questions real quick and then we'll kind of close it out. I'll start with most memorable characters. We know Tommy is one of them. Tommy, he's obviously one of them in this season. But beyond Tommy,
Should we always just have say like
Tommy's always going to be one of the most memorable characters?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to go with Jack Nelson.
Jack, not the man we don't know. Yeah, he was pretty memorable.
Who else do you think about when you leave the episode? It's pretty much him.
I mean. When I leave the episode here, so much of it's just Tommy. Like, you're following Tommy around, like, all the time in this this one episode. Which, I mean, I guess we kind of do in every episode, every season, right? But this one really felt like a walk-along with Tommy. But beyond that, I'd have to give it to Michael. Because he's the only, I mean, since the opening of the season, he kind of like vowed his revenge against Tommy to his mother at her funeral. Mm-hmm. And after 4 years later, right, like he's kind of come a long way. Sure, he's not the man in charge as you know, we can obviously see, but he's picked on the most. But he's working for who's probably the most powerful person that we're aware of in the storyline at this point, which is Jack Nelson. So I think I'll give mine to him.
As far as those in the episode, I'd have to give it to Ada and Carl, because the way they filmed the scene with Carl, he's not a hothead. He's intellectual in his manner. He's serious and somber. He reminds you of Tommy in a way, and he's looking up to Tommy in admiration. The phone rings. The way they do everything is like everything is just pointing to the fact that it's very much like a Michael Corleone type of figure. Who's going to take over for the Godfather, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to be like it's going to be Carl. And I think, how does Tommy die? Carl's too young to run it now. It would have to be that
now, but I'm also wondering if we have like another time skip in here. Don't think we would, but I could see it.
I could see two time skips. I could see one that just happened in this episode, and I could see one in the final episode after all of the conflicts have been resolved.
Yeah,
and a time skip towards what's forward.
Yeah,
but I do wonder if Carl's involved in any sort of criminal element of the business or not.
I would also note though, like historically, the Peaky Blinders were a gang filled with young people.
I think we're past Peaky Blinders at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we're past like the razor blade gang for the most part. Like we don't get a lot of that. The Shelbys are out of it a lot, but I mean, the Shelbys are very much a part of the Peaky Blinders, and you know, I think being involved with this stuff at a young age is just kind of part of the nature of the beast for them.
Yeah.
Anyways, were you gonna say something?
Nope.
Okay. Next and last question. Well, no, I've got one more after this. Best scene. I'll go first. Mine was the entire bar fight.
Yeah. We have the same one.
Yeah.
Okay. We got the same one.
It was great. It was a lot of conflict, a lot of suspense in the room. It was great. Mm-hmm. I have to agree. I really do like the James Bond vibe from the scene there.
Yeah. It's book it. Book mm-hmm. it, man. I got to say that one, the Carl scene, and I did like the intro scene where we pick up with him in the
field. It was great, but I loved it, but I didn't. You kind of love it for the wrong reasons. I don't know if I'm saying
it's just
that
well,
right, but
well done,
it's,
right?
It's just really well done, but even though I love it, like I'm also severely disappointed in it. I'm severely disappointed in Tommy.
Yeah, that's the turmoil you face with some of these shows. You grow to love the character so much that it's like mm-hmm. anything that they do that's outside of what you think is in their character is seen as a betrayal.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily, you know, the wrong thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Any other moments that stood out for you? I know we kind of already talked about the Carl scene. We talked about, you know, the bar fight, which was great. Like, you know, we could see Cillian Murphy becoming a potential James Bond. Maybe we'll see. Anything else that kind of piqued your interest or stood out?
Mm-hmm. I mean, lots, but too much to mention here.
Yeah.
Too much to mention here. I think we can cover that more on Wednesday.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm really interested in the storyline for Arthur at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's probably the biggest question mark outside of just, you know, the overall season and what's going down with Tommy and Michael. But we'll chat about that and talk about our predictions on Wednesday.
Okay. Well, that's actually, it's not going to be Wednesday this week. It'll probably be
Thursday, if I was dead, realistically. But yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's all. Thank you all for tuning in. Zach, you do the rest from here.
For sure. Go ahead and pull up that phone while I go over this. Thank you for listening to the first episode of season 6 of the Peaky Blinders. Again, I'm super excited that this is out. I'm so ready to watch the next episode this Sunday. But you can expect more podcasts for each episode this season, and you can find them anywhere that you find podcasts: Spotify Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can find Story Archives on Instagram at Story Archives. And you can also visit the website at storyarchives.themidnightexchange.com, which leads us into the podcast network. You can visit the website there at themidnightexchange.com. There's a whole bunch of links to social media. There's a podcast there as well. And if you want to send us an email, maybe you have something you want to bring up about the show, you want to tell us something, a little nugget or something that you found interesting, or you want to even suggest another show that we can work on in the future, go ahead and send us an email at podcast@themidnightexchange.com.
Love it. Thank you all for tuning in. We look forward to the rest of the ride that we're going to be on for this whole season, and the beginning of the end, but it was a good start to that end. So on to episode 2. Have a great week, everyone.